Hi there, I'm Dan McGowan. I'm a clean comedian with a passion for raising the bar on clean comedy. This podcast is all about clean comedy, and I'll be interviewing clean comedians and entertainers, and we'll find out what makes them tick.
Or what ticks them off.
So if you want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around, because this is Just Pure Laughs. Well, our guest today, my guest today, is Brian Gillis. He is a family-friendly, for the most part, entertainer. He's a magician, and we're going to talk about that. And he actually has done a lot of performing all around local shows. He's been in Las Vegas. He grew up kind of under the banner of being a magician, and he'll talk a little bit about that. Anyway, Brian, it's great to have you on the show today. Thanks for taking some time to share with us your insights on what it's like doing what you do as a magician and working for the most part clean. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I'm honored to be here. I'm doing great, doing great. I'm out in my workshop, and it is a nice, brisk 50 degrees out here, so I'm wide awake and ready for this.
Oh, that's good. Now, your workshop, is this like the place where you like build all your magic tricks and illusions and all that?
Yeah, you know, so we literally call this the house that magic built. And that's exactly what it is. My wife and I have kind of a strict rule where the magic pays for the magic. And I build, I consult for other magicians all over. And yeah, just right here off in this little farm in Red Bluff, a lot of illusions you might have seen on TV have come out of this little workshop. So yeah.
Really? So you've actually worked as a consultant for other magicians?
Yeah. Currently, I've got roughly, I'd say, 5 or 6 usual guys that I work with that keep coming back to me. Apparently they like me, and we collaborate on ideas, and I try to bring those ideas to life, and they seem to like it. So
now, are these tricks something that if somebody, I'm assuming they pay you for your effort, and if they do, then do they own that, or can you do that trick as well?
You know, it kind of varies. You know, in the world of magic, there's a lot of big egos. And there's a lot of creativity, and a lot of the stuff is pretty open game. None of it's real new ideas. There's little pieces here and there that might be new. And unless a client says, hey, you know, let's keep this exclusive, then a lot of times I won't delve into it with other clients. Just kind of keeping the exclusivity, you know, with the client. So, yeah.
Well, I would think that working in that, I mean, it's kind of like it with stand-up, you know, unfortunately, there are comedians who will steal jokes from other comedians, and it's right. Really, really difficult to curtail that, you know, until you hear it, and then when they come off stage, hey, buddy, that's my joke.
Yeah. So,
but I would imagine with magic, like you just said, there's a lot of illusions that are probably very similar, and then what, maybe you put your own unique twist on them? Is that what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of my stuff, you know, I come behind a lot of great builders, my father being one of them, and I have a very particular style, so other guys that know my work, they'll see it, and they know, oh, that's a Brian Gillis piece, you know, and I kind of put my little flair on everything that I do, and
that's cool. Yeah. So talk about that. We were talking off air, but talk about your dad and he was, you said he was a gospel magician or musician?
Yeah, magician. So it's kind of funny because the two almost clash. I grew up in a very strict Southern Baptist family, and the thought of even performing with cards in the church was kind of a no-no.
Well, Brian, I just want you to know, enjoy hell, you know, yeah. that's where you're headed. Yeah, no, yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it was kind of taboo to bring magic into the church, but, a lot of guys did it. My dad flew under the banner of Andre Cole with Campus Crusade, and he helped put together my father's tour. I was 6 years old. We did 27 states in 7 months. We were
wow.
From the things I remember, you know, we performed in churches, we performed in high school gymnasiums, and his whole show was about bringing God back into the country and putting him, you know, number one in our lives. Yeah. And he used magic as the vehicle to kind of teach different parables in the Bible. And
you know what? I love that because, you know, I guess if you're a Christian singer, or maybe a Christian actor who does one-man plays or something. Maybe that's the same thing I'm about to say, but I like the idea of using something as creative as magic to tell a story that is hopefully gospel-oriented, gospel-focused, so that those audience members can, I don't know, go a little deeper with that and maybe find out something they didn't think about before, right?
Absolutely. And the fact that, you know, we remember more of what we see than what we hear. And yeah, so when you tie the two together, you know, you put a story or a, you know, some scripture, and then you make it visual, it kind of has a tendency to stick to the brain a little bit more and help drive the message home a little easier.
I like that. Now you were saying talking about your dad, you were saying we would do shows. Were you performing with him when you were a child?
Yeah. So I took to the stage at 5 years old. I started.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I guess you could say my magic career began at five. Our whole family, it was a family show. My mom sewed all the costumes and she was my dad's lead assistant. And then my older sister and I, and even my little sister at the time was three. And so she was a part of the show as well. And it was a family affair. We were like the Partridge Family on the road, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. My folks were nightclub entertainers, but, you know, because I was a kid and I couldn't get into the nightclub, I couldn't really perform with them. They were a duo or whatever.
Right.
So I come from a similar kind of a background, except I wasn't up on stage, you know, smoking and drinking and, you know, doing all these, you know, blues songs or whatever. I was at home with my Shirley Temple enjoying that. So, yeah. That's amazing. So you've been at this a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I won my first award at 5 years old in Winona Lake, Indiana. We closed out the Fellowship of Christian Magicians conference. Every year they host a conference for all these Christian entertainers, you know, be it a ventriloquist, mimes, all the above. And that year, my dad was the final act, and my sister and I competed. We did a dove act and had like manipulation stuff with it, with cards and records and silks and all the above. And so, yeah, we took first place in our age bracket, which they call the PV division.
Nice.
And that was the start of it, man.
So you weren't really competing against him because he was in a different division.
Right, right. Yep.
Because absolutely, that would have made like Thanksgiving really awkward.
Yeah.
Like you guys, you know, well, good job winning, you know,
right.
Pass the turkey.
Absolutely.
So you have done this for a long time. And have you always tended to work clean family towards that bent?
You know, I kind of have a funny rule. And as you know, writing comedy, is it going to be funny to the audience if I find it funny, you know? And the one thing I always kind of think is, if my mom came to the show, would she be proud of me? And I know it's kind of silly at 44 to think that way, but, you know, my mom, I might be 44, but let me tell you, she could still twist my ear and give me the what for, you know?
That's good. So she's still with us, obviously. Is your dad still with us?
You know, lost my dad to cancer, going on 15 years this next year.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you have, I've seen you perform in a couple of like coffee houses and wineries and so forth. What kind of places do you feel, I mean, I think I know what you're going to say to this. I was going to say, where do you like performing?
And anywhere.
You'll say, anywhere.
Yes,
anywhere
absolutely.
They'll pay me. But are there places you prefer more than others to perform?
You know, I tend to find, I like the places where there's a bunch of different ages. I love performing for adults because we're dumb. And I say that with tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to fool a kid than it is an adult because, adults, we have such mechanical minds where, you know, I might be double lifting a card, and in magic, that means just having two cards and you're holding it up as one. And, whereas a little kid will say, oh, he's holding two cards, an adult's going, well, there's a gear and it levers this up and that thing pushes out of his sleeve, and you know, they just over
like they're trying to make it more complicated than it is.
Have
you always felt that that's true, that in the many years you've done this, have you always felt that kids were kind of quicker on the trigger to figure things out?
Absolutely. And you know, it's kind of funny, I love kids, you know, I've got three of my own, but I don't like performing for kids. To be honest with you, but it's a love-hate relationship. I mean, I say that, but I secretly deep down, I do love performing for kids. because, you know, as a performer, especially in magic, we kind of have this unwritten law of bringing back childlike wonder. And so to see the looks on their faces, that's rewarding. And I wish I could say, you know, that's why I do it. But in all honesty, you know, if it puts food on the table and it's something I'm passionate about, the two are great things, you know?
Well, I really like what you said kind of at the outset, that your magic needs to pay for the magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So any gigs you get as a magician, hopefully you can funnel that money back into whatever, your next great trick or prop or whatever it is you need.
Yeah, you know, as I sit out here, I'm looking back. I have an office that's partially insulated and partially drywalled, and I'm just waiting for the next gig to finish it.
That's good. Yeah. You have to go out and buy more rabbits and hats and scarves and stuff. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think? What do you think is a big misconception people have with magic? Is that a fair question to ask?
Beyond a shadow of a doubt. I can't tell you how many, vacation Bible schools that I've gone in and I've performed, and I get pulled aside as I'm loading all my equipment back out in the car, and they question my faith because of what I do. And it kind of hurts, you know, because
they question your faith because you are doing magic.
Yeah. Because, you know, magic kind of has a bad rap amongst the churchgoers.
Right.
You know, there's a fine line between being a deceiver and then practicing deception. And so.
Well, yeah. And I'm sure you've come across this. I remember I grew up in L.A. and I remember going at least once, maybe I went twice, to the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
And I remember, and my wife and I went, and I remember both of us thinking, wow, that it feels like there's a lot of quote unquote black magic stuff taking place, like a little bit.
Right.
Devilish or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Almost bordering on witchcraft. It wasn't just sleight of hand or coin tricks or whatever.
Right.
And I, you know, I'm smart enough, and I do this, you know, as an entertainer, so I'm smart enough to know that that's not all of magic. Not all of magic is like that, you know.
Right.
But is that what you're talking about? Like they would kind of liken you to that and then pull you aside and question your faith? How dare you do a card trick, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of symbolism in magic, and there's a very, you know, because spiritualism in magic, like reading people's minds and all that stuff kind of borderlines the whole I'll say, you know, the black magic, the dark magic, and I mean, a lot of the technique is as simple as directing someone towards the end goal of, oh, I'm going to read your mind and getting information out of them without the audience knowing. I think when it comes down to performing that stuff, it's, am I performing it as, oh, I have a spiritualist side of me that can do that? Am I a medium? You know, and that's definitely flirting with that darker area.
Well, I've seen you in real life, and you're really more of a large.
Yeah.
I don't know that you're a medium. But,
yeah.
Well, you're right about that because, you know, I'm not going to give any secrets away here, I don't think, but a lot of people who do these mind reading acts, there are methods you use to help the audience member to kind of, I think you said, guide them towards an answer. And it probably doesn't always work the right way, right? I mean, maybe the answers that you want to get, they don't arrive for whatever reason.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And look at it like a hypnotism, you know, I mean,
right.
You know, as you're driving home from work and you get to your house and you realize, oh my gosh, I don't remember being at this place at this time and all that. And you get hypnotized by the road, but it doesn't mean that you're practicing witchcraft, you know? So.
No, it just means you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're just like this adult that can't, you know, keep track of where you are.
Right.
But that's very interesting. So has that happened a lot to you where a church audience or somebody in a church audience pulls you aside, or is that,
you know,
I
think in modern day, because there's so much exposure to that kind of stuff on TV, you know, with shows like The Masked Magician and different outlets like that, I think it kind of dilutes the waters a little bit. And I don't see as much pushback on it as I did when I was younger. I remember people coming up and shouting at my father after a show, and, you know, how can you call yourself
really?
Man of God and do this, you know? And so, it's kind of, we just live in a
Well, and you
life.
Know what? I've received the same kind of thing. There's early on, because I'm a Christian, early on when I was doing some jokes in my routine, I thought they were funny. I didn't think they were making fun of Jesus.
Right.
But they definitely were kind of poking fun at Christianity, but in a, I like how you said tongue in cheek earlier, you know, nothing to slam my faith.
Right.
But I had a few times when people would come pull me aside and say, I can't believe you did that joke. And it's, I find it offensive. And,
right.
You know, So there's at least a couple of jokes that I just have stopped doing because of that. Why ruffle the feathers if I don't need to?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we live in the era of like John Crist and Tim Hawkins and, you know, Bob Smiley and all these guys that point out all the, you know, the tight tie Christian and the nuances, right, and the funny stuff that we all kind of grew up with. And now we can kind of stand back and laugh at it collectively and go, you know what? Yeah, yeah, I guess we kind of all do that, you know?
I've really been trying to redirect what I do. And in fact, that's kind of one of my goals for 2025 is to become more of an encourager.
Yeah.
If that's possible through my comedy, you know,
absolutely,
coming up with material that everybody can deal with and, you know, relate to or whatever, but I do get kind of tired of the slamming of Christianity, even if it's done tongue in cheek, because sometimes that line, you go right to that edge. And if there's anybody in the audience who might be struggling with whether or not they should believe, now you've given them a reason to say, I knew it, you know,
right.
So,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure everybody has a different take on that, and I'm just one guy. But so in your career here doing magic, have you ever had one that stands out, a time that you were performing and either the trick just fell apart or somebody called you out on it in front of the audience and almost like a heckler and you had to deal with it? Can you share something like that, like a bad experience,
yeah,
working as an illusionist?
Yeah, so, okay, so... I guess not so much to me, but I was a part of it. I had the rare opportunity to work in Las Vegas, and I worked in a show called Extreme Magic starring Dirk Arthur. It was at the Tropicana, and he was the last illusionist on the strip with White Tigers. And I was kind of thrown into it by happenstance. You know, he my first experience with Dirk was watching this TV show called The World's Greatest Magic. It aired every year on Thanksgiving Day. And in our house, it was bigger than the Super Bowl. You know, I knew who David Copperfield was before I knew who Bugs Bunny was in my house. And so,
wow, that's great.
My first exposure to Dirk was this illusion, the appearing helicopter. And he had an empty platform and he showed it. He walked through it. He covered the whole thing. And then he, kind of like a napkin, how you would pull your silverware out of it. You pull on the two sides and it unrolls. They would, right, do that with the cloth, and they'd whisk the cloth away, and there's a helicopter. Well, first, I got the lucky joy of resetting that illusion every night. And so on a few occasions, that particular piece, the helicopter would prematurely appear when it shouldn't have. And Dirk would just come out and say, well, it looks like we're taking the early flight. And so... I mean, I think every magician's gone through it. You know, even in my own show, there's been times where I messed up a preset pre-show, and I get to the point where I'm doing that effect, and I realize, you know, 2 seconds into it, oh no, I didn't set this up. And you just kind of have to have a contingency plan. You know,
right,
sometimes I'll say, oh, well, I guess the magic is weak in this one or something. And, you know, let me gain your trust, yeah, back, you know, and I'll move on to the next piece. Something like that.
That kind of reminds me of that scene. What's the Hugh Jackman movie? Is it the Prestige?
Oh yes. Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. When what's his name? Christian Bale, his character comes up and deliberately sets that cage for the birds wrong or something and tears into the guy's hands, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so that's what you're talking about, right? Presetting an illusion or a trick or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was a great movie. That was a great movie. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, just like in comedy, you know, I'm sure you know the expression, you got to be willing to eat poo, you know, and
right.
So you'll go out and you'll deliver a joke and it will just tank and you just kind of got to move forward, you know, and hope the next one.
Oh yeah.
The house.
You know, I mean, if we are entertaining, I must say if, we who are entertainers, especially in live entertainment. And I did learn this by watching my folks when I was a kid. I would sit in the back sometimes at the nightclub on like some, you know, waitress's lap while she's puffing on a Marlboro. Your parents are really great entertainers, you know. And I would see them have to deal with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, when we are entertaining people in a live situation, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. You really don't, because it's not something you're filming or taping that you can fix it in the mix or whatever. It's just whatever happens, happens. And it really forces you to up your game to be able to come back with those quips.
Yeah.
To be able to come back. And I love what you just said, regain the audience's trust.
Right.
I love that.
Right. And, you know, early on, I learned that it's not necessarily the tricks you're doing or the things you're saying. You know, you almost have to win them. They have to really enjoy you. And so if they enjoy you, if they can relate to you, that's a huge thing. I try to relate to the audience and break that fourth wall and get them on my side.
Well, you definitely do. I mean, when I've seen you perform, you are connecting with the audience, which is great.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have some regular patter or banter that you kind of rely on to pull into your act.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There's a list in the back of my mind at all times. For those occasions. And you know, the beauty of it is when you do mess up and then something just comes out, you got to make a mental note. Okay. They laughed at that. They enjoyed that. And now, you know, they're on my side. And, a lot of times, you know, if I mess up in another show after that or something, I'll use that same line and get that same reaction. And so that's helpful.
I've seen you bring audience members up. I don't know if you've done that a lot when I've seen you, but is that a regular thing that you do, is include audience members?
You know, I try to. It's kind of a ballet. So when I'm writing out a show, I like to open with a grabber. I like to give a talking piece so they can kind of get to know me as a person. And then I like to bring an audience member up and have something happen in their hands. Especially if I look out and I see someone really enjoying the show or something. It's kind of that take home piece for them. So later they can, you know, tell their friends and family, yeah, it happened right in my hand. And, you know, that's real special. I've seen other performers where they bring people up and they kind of poke fun at them. And, I try not to do that. You know, I try to laugh with them.
I think of people like, the amazing Jonathan, who's no longer with us, but I mean, he seemed to be somebody who would, just, you know, double barrel into the audience members, you know,
and I,
you know, it was fun. People laugh at that, but if you're the one being attacked, you know, you're not thinking it's so funny. I mean, maybe you do.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jonathan actually had a rule too. Like if he was poking fun at anyone, chances are they were part of his staff. And so if he had
a
friend or at the time his wife, you know, and they were a part of it. And so everybody got to laugh at that, but then he would later expose, you know, ladies and gentlemen, my wife, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a Don Rickles thing where, you know, everybody's open for grabs and he'll just attack everyone.
Right.
It was more of a structured attack.
Yes.
It was like planned, yeah. And I guess that kind of makes sense because you don't want people to give you a bad name. Hey, what a jerk Jonathan is.
Right.
Or Brian is, you know.
Yeah.
I like that, yeah. So you told me off when we were not, you know, off the broadcast, you said something about how you came into this. You weren't planning on going into magic. Is that what you said?
Yeah, you know, being a magic lover, a magician's son, you know, my dad was actually, he had a registered Ringling Brothers clown face. He went through the clown college.
Wow.
And he was pretty multifaceted. You know, it wasn't always the cool thing. And, you know, it brought a lot of ridicule. I was kind of the odd kid, you know, especially.
You mean like when kids would say, hey, what does your dad do for a living? And you'd say, well, he's a magician and a clown.
Right. It wasn't necessarily the cool thing. We had countless as kids, my sisters and I, we had countless parent teacher conferences where my dad would have to explain that he wasn't abusive to my mom, that, you know, they were rehearsing for shows when he was sticking her in boxes and running swords through her. And so,
oh my goodness.
in hindsight, it's kind of funny to laugh at now. We just, you know, it was hard to relate to other kids, you know, because, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was kind of in the same boat. Kids' parents are, you know, working, selling insurance or, they're businessmen or something. What's your dad do? Well, at night he goes out and plays the piano and sings. That's what he does? Right. Yeah, that's what he does.
Right.
Anyway, right. But enough about me. Let's talk about you.
I even say in my show, you know, magic got me picked on in elementary school. They got me beat up in high school. And it got me free alcohol all through college.
Oh, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, because if you can do tricks, sure. Now, so I had this sudden flash of an image of you, elementary school or junior high or whatever, and you get a report card with an F on it. But because you're an illusionist, you know, you could change that F into an A with no problem, and nobody would ever figure it out.
Without a doubt. But my mom was a teacher. She homeschooled us, and she knew better.
Oh, okay. So she knew. Teacher, so.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yes.
So, do you remember your very first trick that you ever presented or performed?
Oh my gosh, yes. So my very first trick, my father and I did this routine, and he called it my shadow. And he would perform a very elegant linking ring routine. If you're not familiar with the linking rings, it's a bunch of stainless steel rings, and they would magically link and unlink. And it was beautiful. Beautiful. He called it the serenade of rings.
So I
learned that early on. And as dad was doing it, I would be right behind him doing the same exact moves.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think that might've been the second piece. The first piece is a simple coin trick that my dad did. And he actually performed it, in a Super Bowl commercial for 7-Up.
Oh, you're kidding. That's pretty cool.
And so I learned that early on, and when I do it, I tell people, you know, this is many, many, many years of self-denial went into this trick. And I still do that to this day. I keep my dad's coin on me. In the past, it was the one thing I wanted, and I have that very coin in my wallet, so it's with me every day.
What an incredible keepsake, just a wonderful memory of your dad. You know, I love that. Is there any kind of trick, a type of trick, if I'm asking this correctly, that is one, like, your go-to, your favorite, you always want to do this kind of a trick?
It's a piece I don't get to do everywhere, because it involves a live bird. And it's called the Orange Lemon Egg Canary. And
the
Orange Lemon Egg Canary.
Okay.
And nowadays, you know, it's harder to work with canaries and find canaries, so we do it with a parakeet. And what you do, you come out and you have a small table with an orange, a lemon, and an egg. And hanging above it is a small bird cage with a parakeet inside. Okay. And you wrap we call it a foulard. You wrap a foulard around the bird and you pull it through your fingers, and the bird vanishes. You do the same with the egg and the lemon, but when you get to the orange, it's too big to vanish. So you cut open the orange, inside the lemon, cut open the lemon, inside an egg, you break the egg in the cage, and the bird reappears. And I love the psychology of the whole effect. I actually wrote a college paper about it. I'm actually a published author on the same effect. And
very cool. I mean, even hearing you describe that trick, I get tingles. It's like, wow, I can see that happening. Like, I always love those tricks where somebody, you know, cuts open an orange and inside is the card or whatever. And I have my ideas on how that happens, but, you know, we're here to talk about me and my ideas. We're here to talk about you and your amazing ideas. So that's great.
Well, don't worry. If you can hold a secret, so can I.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's great. Is there any trick that you are still shocked that it fools people when you do it?
I think you might have even witnessed this effect. I do a bit where my phone walks me through vanishing a banana.
Yes.
But the whole time the phone is saying bandana. And I correct it several times, and I do the whole effect with the banana. And the method of it's actually really kind of stupid. I call it a crutch because there's no technical ability to the trick. But it's the one that everyone talks about after the show. And,
What I love about that trick is it's the same thing with certain types of jokes that I like. There's such an element of, if this is fair to say, I hope it doesn't offend you, like idiotic, simplicity. And, you know, it's like, it's so simple and it's so kind of goofy that everybody loves it because it's written so well. It's a well-written, silly joke slash trick. And it's the kind of thing that somebody probably looks at and goes, hey, I can do that at the next party, you know,
right.
Whether right. they can or can't was, you know, time to tell. But, yeah, I love that trick, that illusion. And it's a crowd pleaser.
Well, there's a rule in magic. They say kiss, and it's keep it simple, stupid. And, the simpler the effect, the harder they're going to rack their brain, trying to wrap their head around how it's done. And some of the ideas after shows when people come up and say, hey, when you did this, you know, I think you had this, this, and this. And it's like, it couldn't be any further than the truth, you know?
That's so funny how people want to come up and explain to you the tricks you just did as if they've got it figured out. And I'm sure sometimes they get close, but you know, for a comedian, the closest that ever comes is when you're in a group setting and people don't know what you do and they say, what are you? Well, I'm a comedian. Oh, tell us a joke.
All right.
Well, you know, fine. I'll tell you a joke. It's not going to work so well because we need 100 other people that are all in the audience enjoying what I'm doing. But
Yeah. I always love when people say, oh, you're a musician. Can you do a trick?
Yeah, you know? That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the pastor of our church always mixes up those words, musician and magician. And it's kind of funny. I mean, he has no problem making fun of himself for doing that. But when he starts talking and you say that, is he talking about a musician or a magician? Because those two words are very close. You know?
Yeah.
It's like when I tell people I'm a comedian, they don't usually mistake that for heart surgeon. It's just, okay, you're not going to, like, confuse those two. I'm a comedian. Oh, could you remove my spleen? No, I'm not a doctor. Yeah. So, Brian, what got anything coming up you can talk to us about? Shows locally? This will probably hit the airwaves. It'll probably land maybe in the next couple of days. So, anything coming up, January, February, shows coming up?
You know, it's kind of, this is a stagnant time of year. Christmas season's real busy, as is, like, Halloween. I don't really have anything in the hatch as we speak. A lot of times, and especially now, I'm kind of jumping back into it. I made a promise to my wife when my son was born that I would, I'd shelve magic. Cause at the time, you know, I was gone quite a bit and I was doing magic quite often. And, you know, now that my kids are older and my wife and I, we've been married as long as we have, you know, she's kind of to the point where, please take off for the weekend.
If you could leave, that would be great.
So I'm kind of
I'll handle the dishes. I'll mow the lawn. You just go do your little magic skits. Go do that. Yeah.
You sound just like her.
Oh, do I? That's good.
Yeah.
So, that's right.
Yeah. So nothing in the hatch as we speak. I'm using this time to kind of, develop a whole new show.
Oh, really? Cool.
And put together some new stuff. There's some stuff I want to test. So, you know, I'm going to probably hit up, you know, you guys, the local comedy scene and see if you guys have anything where I can go out and kind of test some new material.
Do you basically promote yourself or do you have an agent? How's that work?
You know, I had an agent for about 2 years and I found that we could equally promote the show, you know,
right.
Especially with me, I'm what you would consider a weekend warrior. This isn't my full-time job. I'm a fire alarm technician. And so I passively fight fire. But you know, I like to get out and do the weekend gigs. And, we're looking to do a summer tour, a friend of mine down in Vallejo. And, he brings a whole different style of magic. And, we're kind of talking about maybe doing a grassroots tour and taking it into the little mountain communities around us here.
What a fun idea. Yeah. Well, I know people would be thrilled to see you. You know, I mean, it's having seen your act, for those of you who don't know Brian, you should check him out. Go look him up. And I'm sure you have some clips out there maybe people could see.
Yeah, I've got some really old clips on YouTube. You know, I need to get with it and update things and probably make myself a little more known on social media.
It's hard to keep up with that. And I've got old clips, too. And I don't cringe when I see them, but I think, yikes, if they hire me from that, they're going to think, is your dad showing up? You know, we came here to do our act. So I've had to kind of update that stuff, too. But so how do people find you?
You know, right now they can visit my website. It's briangillis.com. It's Brian with a Y, and Gillis is GILLES.com. Just know all the photos were from 2016, so I'm quite a bit heavier and quite a bit older. So that's in the works as well.
Well, that's a great way to sell yourself there. That's good. I'm older now and fatter now. So that's good. That looks great on a resume. You know.
Amen.
Well, I'm with you. Like 2025 is once again, I'm looking around and thinking, do I want to join a gym or do I want another cupcake or where am I at in life? You know, what do I want to do with this? So the best way to reach you is briangillis.com.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Brian, I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And I'm so glad you do what you do with a clean bent to it. And if you are a church out there looking to entertain your church, Brian is a great guy to bring and have at your next event. I'm sure he's great for family events, for maybe annual meetings, fundraising events, all sorts of things where you just want to bring somebody in to entertain all ages. Maybe you have a family camp coming up in the summer or something like that. Maybe even a kid's party. I don't know. I mean, I'm probably putting words in your mouth there, but I'm sure if somebody had a kid's party and they said, Brian, can you come and perform? You're not going to say, no, don't ever call me again. You're going to say, I'd love to come and perform.
My office needs drywall. So
yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the top of your promo. I like that. My office needs drywall. That's good. Yeah. You know, you're always right there with that major headline that sells you. My office needs drywall. I want to get thinner and I want to get younger, but you can't do much about the younger part. I think you're kind of stuck with that.
Always young at heart.
I like that. Young at heart. Cool. Well, Brian, it's been so great being with you. Any last words you want to share with us before I kick you out and say, go learn a trick or something?
Oh, gosh. For all the listeners, just, believe in the impossible, believe in yourself, and believe, I guess.
That's good. You just gave us a bumper sticker for 2025. I like that. That's good. All right, Brian. Well, thanks for being with us. It's been great having you here. Everybody give from where you are, give Brian a big round of applause. I'm sure he'll hear it. Applause to Brian for being here with us. That's great. Brian, it's been so great having you with us.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks, Dan.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with magician and illusionist Brian Gillis. Once again, you can find him at briangillis.com. briangillis.com. Great for your upcoming events. You need to see his act and bring him to your next event. And remember, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast from. We have more great episodes coming up in this second season, and I'm looking forward to having you here with me. Please tell your friends about it. So thank you for being with us today. My name is Dan McGowan. This is Just Pure Laughs. See you next time.